Alright. I feel a little lethargy today within us. I just feel like there's a lot of fatigue going on in this time period. I think that there's it's cold outside, we're moving into winter, there's a lot going on, and we can get tired and bogged down, and I think we got to be a little careful of that. And so I'm going to challenge us to get spurred up. So I was, when they were reading out of Isaiah 9, 6, and 7, I was like, woo! I was like, that's the day that's coming, right? That's the day the Lord is going to come and reign, right? And it's going to be peace. We're not going to live in all this crazy turmoil that we're living in. We should be excited, right? We should be jacked up about that. That's our hope and faith, right? And we read that and we're like, all right. That's cool. I'm excited. Like, oh man, it's like, woo! I just wanted to stand up and shout. I was like, praise you, Lord. This is beautiful. This is what I long for. I long for that. I want peace. Man, and Mandy, you nailed it. You nailed it with that song. Because that song goes with the message always, right? Like, Mandy gives me a paper last week and she says, I'd like to play this song. I listened to the words and I was like, oh, this is crazy. Answer the call. Answer the call. And remember that, because that's going to go along with what we're going to be reading. You need to be spiritually ready. I got a lot to say. And you can't get bogged down. We're going to go through the whole book of Esther. Yeah, this is true. So we're going to skip a lot of things, but we're going to go through the important parts that the Lord said I had to share. And I said, Lord, can I strip this down any? And he said, no, this is what I need to share. So guess what? Grab some spiritual energy and get pumped up, because this is important. This is important. Bro, answer the call. And this whole message started when I was on Facebook and I'm seeing these posts about, where would you rather be? Would you rather be in the woods, up in the woods all by yourself, in this beautiful cabin in the woods, or would you be like to be down in a hut, down on the beach? And everybody has an answer to that, right? Everybody has an answer. I prefer the woods, I prefer the beach, or whatever. But really what they're asking is, where would you like to get away from everything? Where would you like to get away from everything? But you know what? We're not called to be away from everything. Yeah, there's times where I just want to go bury somewhere. And just say, the heck with the world, the heck with people. Let them do their thing. They're evil and wicked anyways. Just let them go. And why do I have to be a part of this? Why do I have to be a part? I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to feel that burden. I just want to go and cower away. But that's not where we're meant to call to be. Right? That's what that song said, right? So many years ago, God started a transformation process in me. And one of the topics he started dealing with was I had a tendency to look at the negative side of things. And I thought if I looked at the negative side of things, then when positive things happen, I would feel better about that. But I would always protect myself and be, if I was planning on the worst and the worst happened, then I was already prepared. And that's a stupid way of thinking. It's how I was like, in the process of life, when we get hurt so many times, we try to protect ourselves, and that was one of the ways I was trying to protect myself. I learned that through Christ, through prayer, right? And so he said, you need to try to focus more on the positive. And so that's what I've been working on. And he's done a tremendous thing. And I spend a lot of time trying to tell other people that they need to change their mindset and look at the positive through it all. But internally, in my spirit, and lately especially, I feel this angst. This angst. And I don't think I'm the only one. And I know I'm not the only one, because I was listening to Glenn Beck and Max Lucado, and they were talking about this. And then I was reading a book by John Cooper, and he's talking about this heaviness inside our spirit. Because we see all the craziness going on, and it doesn't set well. And we're trying to navigate this in a good Christian fashion. But our spirit and our flesh wants to pounce out and attack. And we have this battle going on within us, or at least I do. But don't be confused. Even though I have this angst inside my spirit, I still have positivity by the Lord. He's always working. And he's saying, don't let that angst come out and show people that angst. Show them the positivity of what I'm doing in your life. Show them the positivity of what I'm doing in your life. And I don't really understand how that can happen. I really don't, because inside I'm in turmoil. On the outside, I'm trying to show everybody positivity, but I do know the Lord is doing it. And it's only the Lord that can do it. That God's grace carries me and keeps me focused on the positive things. So why is my spirit grieving is the question I ask the Lord. And when I was going through that with him, I was thinking, because the world has caused so much confusion that people are becoming more sad, lost, depressed, and negative. And I get it. There's a lot going on that fosters these thoughts. I can see why people are negative. There's enough to be negative about, isn't there? Especially for us older generation, like the kids, they don't really know this stuff because they haven't lived through this stuff. We see where there's a better life that's changing in not a good way. And they don't know any different. And so we got to be sympathetic to them not knowing this. Right? So when we talk to them, we got to understand that they didn't know a different way. They didn't see how Christianity was revered in the past and now is getting attacked. What they see is attack on Christianity. And why would they follow such a religion as Christianity? So these things cause angst in us. And there's a lot of deception going on. We live in a world that wants people divided. They don't want us coming together. They want us divided. And it's easier to control individuals than it is as a united group with a common belief. Right? Divide and conquer. We live in a world where we are told we were not created, but it happened by chance. That whatever we do in our lifetime will be forgotten in three generations from now. That your life means nothing. Three generations from now, they won't even know you. That's what the world is saying. That's the world is saying. And that fosters a thought of, you need to do whatever you love to do now. And who cares with the rest? And selfish thoughts start to penetrate our mind. That when we die, it's lights out. with nothing after that. That's the world. They're saying, that's it. You're done. You're going in the ground. That there's no God. So be selfish and do whatever pleases us now, no matter how it affects others, because you will miss out if you don't. You don't want to miss out on that good time. You want to gather whatever you can gather now and enjoy it, because after that is nothing. That's the message of the world that's going on. Anybody seeing that stuff?
Yeah.
Anybody? Yeah. Right? And because of this, we have become selfish, negative, and critical. We do not focus on all the things that are good and right in the world, our lives and others. We are quick to point out others' flaws. Very quick to point out others' flaws. Someone does a good thing 99% of the time, and we find out one thing that they did, and we got to point it out. That we didn't agree with, that we thought was wrong. But we're not praising them the 99% of the time. We're not encouraging them. We're pointing out the flaw. At times, we recognize we try to change and comment with a positive comment to someone. But then we have a tendency to screw it up because we say, but, if only, you should have. I've been there. I've done that. And it's a killer. This can happen in marriages. It can happen at work. It can be in a church. It can be in your house. Ever hear anyone say, thank you for what you did, but you should have done it this way? How does that make you feel? How does that make us feel? Does it really make us want to keep going? Does it really spur us to be better? No. Some of us hear what we are doing wrong often, but never hear what we're doing right. Over time, it sucks the life and motivation right out of us. If you work for a company that micromanages you, you understand this. Because they're picking and picking and picking and showing you wrong, wrong, wrong. And after a while, you say, the heck with it. I don't care. Keep pointing it out. I'm not motivated to improve. Because nothing I do is satisfactory to you. We can become defeated quickly. But today's message is to tell you something. The world and the evil one that rules over this world does not want you and me to know. Amen, right? There is a God. We were created by Him. We're accountable to Him. We worship Him, which also benefits our life in many ways. God does not make mistakes. Each life matters. Each life matters. There's a lot of positive things going on in the midst of chaos. No matter what happens in our lives or all around us, we were created for many purposes in this world. Don't listen to the lies. We are made for the time period we were born in. God did not make a mistake. You were not meant to be born in the 1800s. You were not meant to be born in the 1600s. You were meant to be born right now.
Amen.
Yes.
We are made to do our job designated by God. Remember the Patriots logo, right? Do your job. Don't worry about everybody else. Do your job. Do your job. Everybody part of a team, right? If you're focused on somebody else's issues, you're not focusing on your job. Your job is to block somebody, you block somebody. It's not to tell the receiver to run down the other side. That's his job. Do not focus on what others are doing wrong, but focus on what God is telling us to do on an individual basis and as a church collectively. When we focus on these things, our lives can be more fulfilled. Encourage others in a positive manner and create a brighter light to penetrate darkness. Even when we feel in turmoil on the inside, we can be strong, confident, and a positive person we were created to be because we have the Spirit of Christ within us. Right? If you have the Spirit of Christ within you, your spirit that is in angst and turmoil can be overpowered if we submit to surrender to that Spirit of the Holy Ghost. And that's how positive comes out of crappy times. Today we're going to focus on the book of Esther. We're going to go through this book highlighting what God has led me to highlight with a few particular points he wants us to focus on at this time. The book of Esther is an interesting book. It doesn't really talk about God a lot. But we can see it doesn't talk about it all, right? So, but what we do see is God working. And that's what this message is about. How God is working in people's lives for right now. Okay? There's a couple of clarifications I want to get going. If you never read the book of Esther, or you did, and you were confused, because I was also confused at a time, because they talk about two different names of a king. And that's the same person, but the writer, for some reason, used both names, the Greek and Hebrew. I can't remember. But anyways, one of them, there's two different names. It's the same king, okay? So you're going to read King Xerxes, and you're going to read King Ahasuerus, and they are the same person, okay? But I don't know. Like when people had two names in the Bible, a lot of times when they converted the names, they always stuck with that name. But for some reason in this book, they don't. They kind of flip flop a little bit. So when I say the king, it's the king. Okay, one king, two different names. Sometimes we might read. This king reigned over 127 provinces, stretching from India to Ethiopia. So he had a big reign. Okay, he had a big reign. So we're going to start in Esther 1:5, and it says, in these days were completed, the king made a feast lasting 7 days for all the people who were present in Shushan, the citadel, from great to small, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. He's making a feast, okay? If we skip down to verse 9, we're going to see Queen Vashti, who's a very pleasant lady, also made a feast for the women in the royal palace, which belonged to the king. And I won't get people confused if I say the king, right? I get all confused. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, which means that they had parties. And a lot of times when the Bible's referring to this, they were drinking a little excessive at times. Okay? They were merry with wine. They were a little on the potty side. He commanded 7 eunuchs who served in the presence of the king to bring Queen Vashti before the king wearing her royal crown in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials For she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, which does not happen in that time period. Okay? This was a different time period. People are all worried about women's rights in this time period. Back then, women had zero rights. We've come a long ways, right? So when they say that we're terrible people, and they don't realize how far we've come, refer them back to this stuff and see how bad things were. She refused to come to the king's command brought by his eunuchs. Therefore, the king was furious and anger burned within him. How dare she not come when I told her to come? Right? This is serious stuff. I'm going to skip down to 15. We shall do to Queen Vashti according to the law, because she did not obey the command of the king brought to her by the eunuchs. So now there's going to be a punishment. And the member king answered before the king and the princess, Queen Vashti has not only wronged the king, but she but also all the princes and all the people who are in all the provinces of the king. For the queen's behavior will become known to all women, so that they will despise their husbands in their eyes. So here's the worry. If the queen doesn't come to the king, that's going to set an example to all the other women, that they don't have to listen to the men. And that is a problem in that culture. So you can see the layout here of where women lie. And this is an important setup that we got to pay attention to, because when Esther does what she does, it takes a lot of boldness to do it. But if you don't pay attention to what's going on and what the Lord's saying here about how women were treated back then, you're going to miss the importance of what she does. When they report, the king commanded Queen Vashti to be brought in before him, but she did not come. This very day, the noble ladies of Persia and Media will say to the king's officials that they have heard of the behavior of the queen. Thus, there will be excessive contempt and wrath. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out before him, and let it be recorded in the laws of Persia and Medes, so that it will not be altered, that Vashti shall come no more before the king. And let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So think about this a little bit, right? At that time period, again, it's a different time period, the king can just make a decree and change the rule of law. And that is why the United States was made up of different branches, so that did not occur. Now, it is occurring, but that's an example of why you don't want one person dictating what happens, because even if you think that particular thing is just, the next one may not be just. That's right. And it can be changed at any time. Lessons back then coming out now. Okay? And we can just replace whoever we want back there. We can toss Vashti aside and bring in another person who is more suitable, who will listen to me. What a throwaway situation, huh? When the king's decree, which we will make, is proclaimed throughout all empire, all wives will honor their husband, both great and small. So the whole point is, the wives have to always be listening to the husbands at that moment in time. Okay? And that's why everything got all messed up to start off with. Then they basically decided to replace the queen with somebody else and decided to have a search for somebody for a different queen. And that's where this kind of comes in. So in chapter 2, we meet Mordecai, who works at the palace gates. Okay, so Mordecai works at the palace gates. And in Esther 2:7, which is where we're going to go now, we're going to find out more. And Mordecai had brought up Hadasha, who is also Esther. Isn't this great? I mean, I love how that time period was. Like, we'll give you a name, but we won't call you that. We'll call you something else. So, you're going to go by whatever we want to call you. So, yeah. Like Joker and I. Exactly. Yeah. But I think like nicknames are different, right? Because nicknames are kind of like fun and stuff like that. This is just going from one name to another. Like it's just So anyways, so he had brought up Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. So Mordecai's taking, he's the one that's brought up Esther, is basically what it's saying. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her in as his own daughter. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favor, and so he readily gave beauty preparations to her besides her allowance. The 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace. And he moved her to the maidservant. I skipped that. I just skipped the scripture on there. I just realized that. I went from 7 to 9. and he moved her and her maidservant to the best place in the house of the woman. So here comes, they're going to bring Esther into with all the other maidservants to try to have a Bachelor type situation. Who knows about the show The Bachelor? This was the original Bachelor show. Okay? So you have the king and you have these people who are vying to become queen. They want to get that rose from the king. I think that's where they got the show from. I don't know. Esther had not revealed her people or her family, meaning she was Jewish and she did not reveal that to anybody. She did not reveal that. For Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. So Mordecai went to her and said, "Hey, I don't feel you should reveal anything about your Jewish heritage here." Okay? And so she did. Because she admires Mordecai, right? So we're going to skip to 17. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her the queen instead of Vashti. She won the bachelor. Fred. After this happens, Mordecai hears about a plot that 2 of the king's doorkeepers were going to try and kill the king. So these 2 court doorkeepers are going to think about killing the king. Mordecai overhears this and he tells Esther, and Esther warns the king and gains more credibility with the king for saving his life. Now that's important, because that also is going to come up later on again. If we go to 3:1. I'm still recovering from my little battle, so excuse me. After these things, the king promoted Haman. Now, this is the first time we see Haman. He's the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai, who's a big rebel, would not bow or pay homage. Now, why would he not do that? Why would he not do that? Because he's a faithful man, right? We bow to one person, right? One person, that's God, right? That's the only person we're going to bow to. We have to bow to other people, right? And he knows that. He's Jewish. He knows that, right? He's not going to bow. It's funny, there's a lot of other Jewish people there. They bow. He did not. Guess who gets singled out? Mordecai does, right? Now, all of a sudden, he's on the blacklist. That's a different show. Now, Haman was an egomaniac that after he found Mordecai was a Jew, he not only wanted Mordecai to die, but he says, hey, because of you not bowing, we're going to kill all the Jews. That makes a lot of sense. Haman convinces the king to make a decree. This is where it becomes an issue, with decrees being made just like that. Esther 3:13. Dispatches were sent by swift messengers into the provinces of the empire, giving the order that all Jews, young and old, including women and children, must be killed, slaughtered, and annihilated on a single day. This was scheduled to happen on March 7th of the next year. The property of the Jews would be given to those who killed them. Isn't that great? So we're going to kill all the Jews, and then all of their property is going to go to the people who kill them. There's a little incentive there. Mordecai was enraged at that moment, and the Jewish people were distressed. I would be too. Esther finds out and is also distressed about the events that are going to take place. Esther sends a message to Mordecai, and we see this in 4:11. All the king's officials and even the people in the provinces know that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die unless the king holds out his gold scepter and the king has not called for me to come to him for 30 days. Now back then, you had to touch the gold scepter in order to approach the king. Okay? You got to understand that. And Mordecai, in 13, we're going to go to 13. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape the king's palace any more than any other Jews. He's saying, just because you're the queen, don't think you can't follow the same rules. You still have to follow these rules. This is the rule of law there. For if you remain completely silent at this time, now this is where Mordecai's belief comes in, okay? Now Mordecai, he has this belief that everything's going to be all right no matter what, okay? He's furious, but he also has faith that this is all going to work out for the good, okay? And so he says, for if you remain completely silent at this time, even if you don't do anything, to help us. Relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. It will come from somewhere. I trust that God is going to work out here. But you and your father's house will perish. So we're going to be okay, but maybe not so good for you. And then after it says right here, yet who knows? So all of a sudden there's this change in attitude that comes in. Something hits him. He says, yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? So he says, even though you may not do anything, I think we're going to be okay. But who knows? Maybe you were made for this time period, for right now, that something good that you can do for this situation just pops out, right? Then Esther told, okay, we're going to do it, we're at 15 now. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews who were present in Shushan and fast for me. So then she calls on everybody to fast for her. Why? Fasting has power, right? We're called to fast when big things are coming. Sometimes we need a little extra help from the Lord, and he wants to see if we're going to fast, we're going to give up stuff to show him that this is important to us. Please, please, Lord, listen to us. And then if we're faithful, and he's faithful to us, it's amazing. Fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, nights, or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. That is a good leader. There's a good leader, right? She isn't telling everybody else, you go do this. But I'm not going to do that. Like people who say, like, hey, you want to go to heaven? Go blow yourself up in this place. But I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it. Well, wouldn't you want to go to heaven? Why don't you do it? Right? Like, a good leader knows, like, if I'm telling people to do something, then I got to do the same thing. Right? So if they're fasting, I'm fasting. That's how it should work. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. I will go to the king, which is against the law. That worked out really good for Vashti. When she did decide to break the law in his eyes. And if I perish, I perish. It's worth it to me. This is a sacrifice I am willing to do. If I perish, I perish. That's a killer statement right there. It's amazing. She surrendered everything at this point, including possible death. In 17, so Mordecai went his way and did according to Esther commanded him. So he listened. He was obedient. In chapter 5, we see through a series of coincidences. And who do we believe in coincidences? No, we do not. No, we do not. Esther finds a way to touch the gold scepter. You can read about it. There's a whole sequence of events that happen here. All by coincidence. And then she invites the king and Haman to a banquet. The whole sequence of her asking the king, this is not as easy as it seems at this time here. This took courage and faith. This took courage, even though a whole sequence of events happened, it still took courage and faith to do what she's going to do and what she did so far. 5:3, the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom. Up to half the kingdom. So he's really good. He's begging for it, right? And Esther answered, if it pleases the king, let King Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him. And then the king said to him, bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said. So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And while they were drinking wine again, of course, the king said to Esther, "Now tell me what you really want. What is your request? I will give it to you in half the kingdom." And Esther replied, "This is my request, deepest wish. I have found favor with the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my request, do what I ask. Please come with Haman tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for you." So first she goes to the king. "What's your request?" "Come to the banquet." "Okay, go to the banquet." "Okay, tell me what your request is." "Come to another banquet tomorrow." Does that even make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. But for some reason, she said that. And another day had to pass. One more day had to pass in order for everything to fall the right way. Right? So for some reason, she says, "Come to the another banquet. And then I will explain this all." It's all about. She basically saying, "I am not going to tell you tonight, but I will tell you tomorrow at a second meeting." And Haman is very happy at this point. Things are really going well for Haman, and he's thinking, and he's trying to figure out how he's going to kill Mordecai. He's still mad that he didn't bow down. He's got this big plan, and he's going to kill him, and he involves a lot of people. That's a story for another day. In chapter 6, the king is having trouble sleeping. Okay, so that night, after the banquet, he can't sleep. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. And he asked to be read to from the record of history. And behold, by coincidence, the person reading chooses to read about the night Mordecai saved his life by telling Esther about the doorkeeper's plot to kill him. Coincidence after coincidence after coincidence leading to this. And the king says, "Wow, I forgot all about that night." And because of this, the next morning, the king asks in verse 3 of 6:3, "What reward and recognition do we ever give Mordecai for this? He saved my life, but what do we do for him?" And his attendants replied, "Nothing. Nothing has been done for him." Boy, isn't that a coincidence that nothing was done for him back then? And all of a sudden, now here we are, and this is coming out. The king, trying to decide what he should be done to honor Mordecai, asked Haman, "What should be done to honor someone without Haman knowing who it is?" And so Haman responds in verse 7. So Haman has no clue. And the king said, "What would we do for someone who did this special thing for me? What would we do for him?" And Haman gives him his ideas. So he replied, "If the king wishes to honor someone, he should bring one of the king's own royal robes, as well as a horse that the king himself has ridden, one with a royal emblem on its head." This is pretty special. This is pretty special. "Let the robes and the horse be handed over to the one of the king's most noble officials. And let him see that the man whom the king wishes to honor is dressing in the king's robe and led through the city square on the king's horse. Have the officials shout as they go, 'This is what the king does for someone he wishes to honor.'" This is a grand plan for someone he hates, and he doesn't even know it. I love that. And the king said to him, "Excellent! Quick, take the robes and my horse and do just as you have said for Mordecai the Jew." And can you imagine Haman's face when he just realized the person he was just about to kill is now going to get honored in the way that he said should be honored. Wow! Boy, I wish this would happen more often in life. Oh, man, that would be awesome. That's why I love this story so much. There's so much to it. Go and read the whole thing. It's just so good. All right. Quick, take the robes and my horse and just do it as you said to Mordecai and you, who sit at the gate of the palace. Leave nothing out that you suggested. Leave nothing out. Do it all. I love that. Go to 7:3. So that all goes on, and then now we're getting back to Esther, and she's back at the banquet. Queen Esther replied, "If you have favor, so what do you want, Esther? What is your request? You had me come to the first banquet, you're coming to the second banquet. What do you want?" Queen Esther replied, "If I have found favor in the king, and it pleases the king to grant my request, I ask that my life and the lives of the people, of my people, will be spared. For my people, I have been sold to those who would kill, slaughter, annihilate us. If we had merely been sold as slaves, I could remain quiet." So she's saying, even if I had been sold as slaves, I could have been okay with that. But now you're going to kill us all. And I'm not okay with that. "For that would be too trivial a matter to warrant disturbing the king." Can you see? Boy, the king had reign back then, didn't they? Like she realizes, like, that would have been trivial. If we would have been slaves, that would have been trivial. I don't think that's trivial. Do you think that's trivial? No. It's not trivial. It's like, wow. It's just a time period, right? We got to understand the time period. "Who would do such a thing?" King Xerxes demanded. "Who would be so presumptuous to touch you?" Now, why is he asking her that? Because he doesn't know she's a Jew. And that his decree is going to kill all the Jews. Esther replied, "This wicked Haman is our adversary and our enemy." Haman grew pale with fright before the king and the queen. She's calling out another male. She, the woman. Doesn't happen in that time period. She's bold. She's bold. Haman grew pale with fright before the king and queen. Then the king jumped to his feet in a rage and went out into the palace garden. And I'm not going to read any more from there, but I will summarize this. From that point on, and you can read about this, the king had Haman killed and then Mordecai and Esther figured out a way to reverse the decree to kill the Jews, allowing the Jews to be saved, all because of her boldness and what she had to do. And the main points, there's a lot of points in this that we've talked about, okay? There's a lot of things that we've talked about. But the main points that the Lord wants me to point out, that the reason he wanted me to share all of this, is one, is that there is no coincidences. There is no coincidences. Things happen for a particular purpose. God sets it up. Now, whether or not we're paying attention to that is up to us. But God sets the whole thing up. There is no coincidences. The Lord puts people in situations in place for reasons and purposes. The question is, are we paying attention to what the Lord is doing with us and all around us? Okay? Number two, the Lord does not make mistakes. He doesn't make mistakes. Each one of us were created for this particular time period for particular purposes. Don't let anybody ever tell you different. That's a crock of crap. Yes, it's stressful. Yes, we have hurts and struggles in our lives. Yes, we have internal angst when we look at what's going on in the world. But let's not lose sight that we were created to be united with Jesus while here on earth during this time period. This time period. You were placed for this time period. For His Spirit to be placed in us. To be able not only to handle everything that's coming at us, the arrows that are flying at us, but to be able to thrive, be joyful, find the positive in the midst of a fallen world. And I don't think we're doing a great job of this. I haven't done a great job of this. The Christians have to be better. We have to rise up. We're not here just to survive. I don't believe that. And I don't believe Esther was just there to sit back and watch things unfold. She was there for a purpose. And she wasn't meant just to survive. She was meant to thrive. To find joy, to be positive, to show others. We were not created to cower. Maybe, just maybe, we were born for this time period, for right now, in the midst of the turmoil, in the midst of the wars, in the midst of a country that doesn't have an identity right now. We were made to handle that. God put us here for a reason. Be encouraged. Grab these words. Mix them with faith. See the possibilities that God has placed in our lives. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how young you are. I don't care if you're sick right now, if you can't do this, if you can't do that. There is something you can do that God is going to give you the ability to do. Answer the call. That's the song we started with. Everybody has a calling. If you believe in Christ, you have a calling. You cannot sit back and ignore the calling. We're meant to step up. Be encouraged. Dear Lord, give us the courage. Bring the fire to us. Don't let our candles burn out. Keep showing us that we have purpose, that you created us for right now, right here. We're not meant to sit back. You love us too much. You've brought us out of the crap that we've been in so far. We're still standing. That means that we still have purpose. You make no mistakes. Jesus Christ was born in the time period He was born because that was when you designated it. That was when this belief would explode. If it would have been today, it wouldn't have been as good as it was then. Help us to have trust in You. and boldness in you. We love you and thank you. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you. All right, we're going to close it out. Gary, you got that song?